Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
The Norman Rockwell Museum in Stockbridge announced big news this week. They have nearly doubled their collection of American illustration art with a new gift from the famous artist school of Westport, Connecticut. The donation includes more than 5,000 uncatalogued artworks, including several original works by Rockwell, along with other archives. The Norman Rockwell Museum has the world's largest collection of original Norman Rockwell art, and we'll discuss their new additions and the state of Rockwell in the art world. Museum Director and CEO Lori Norton Moffat joins us in Studio A this morning, and it is a delight to have her here. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Joe. It's wonderful to be here.
I always love having you here. So let's talk about this addition from the famous artist school of Westport, Connecticut. And this is, how did this all come about?
Well, we've been in conversation with the owners of the famous artist school, the Livesey's, for some time, and they made a decision that the collection really required better care than they could give it. They'd been storing it and taking care of it for a very long time. And of course, we're looking to grow and build our collection of American illustration art, and they made the wonderful decision to donate it to the museum. The best I can describe this collection is to think Mad Men and the era of the illustrator creating the ideas of American life in the 50s and 60s. And this was the subject matter being taught by this school. And Norman Rockwell was one of the founding artists, along with Al Dorn, whose idea it was to create this correspondence art school.
So what you're actually getting is really somewhat of a diverse collection then.
There are many artists represented in it, the 12 founders, and then the subsequent teachers who continued to teach and be part of the curriculum. And each artist had a unique style. So we know for Norman Rockwell, for example, his working process included his very meticulous sketch phase, doing his small conceptual study, working through his studies. And so each faculty member at the school had a particular way of teaching. And they created curriculum books, and people learned to draw and learn to create art from these various teachers. They would send in their materials, they would have them critiqued, and then they would move on to the next phase of proficiency in development of their artistic skills.
So what are you able to do with this material? Because it's uncatalogued, and so you have to go through it. And there's a lot of work involved in this.
There is a great deal of work involved in taking in a collection of this magnitude, and I liken it to the work we've been doing to process Norman Rockwell's archives for the past 10 years. We initially received this collection in boxes from the studio, file cabinets, uncataloged, boxes of fan mail, files of business correspondence, boxes of photographic negatives, all uncataloged, and we broke that project out into phases. We've been working on it for a 10-year period. We've been inventorying, creating the cataloging, and finding aids for the archives, rehousing the materials, and ultimately digitizing them so that they're accessible online from anywhere in the world. And we'll go through a similar process with the famous artist school work, first tackling the art collections, inventorying, going through what is there, creating an organizing system, bringing some of it to public light in the form of an exhibition. We'll be working on an exhibit of these materials so people can really understand the importance of the work and the period.
There is Rockwell work included.
Yes, there's a considerable amount of Rockwell work. He was a prominent teacher there for a time. People don't really know this about him very much, but we've explored his working process through the studies and examples we have in our own collection, but this amplifies that and I think will be very interesting to people.
And there's an interesting point in the press release that you released on this acquisition that because the values of Norman Rockwell work is so astronomical, has just gone into the stratosphere. Obviously, as a museum and institution, that kind of keeps you out of buying this stuff. So it is through these gifts that you're allowed to add to your collection, which is kind of your only way of doing it at this point.
Well, yes, and we're like so many other museums in that regard. There are museums all over this country who would like to acquire Norman Rockwell works, and they can't afford to. The auction prices have skyrocketed. And so we all are in relationship with many, many art collectors with the hope that collectors will donate their art, as a number have generously donated their original Rockwell paintings to us in the last few years as well.
So when you have a painting like Saying Grace that goes up for auction, how does that affect your ability to show and to keep that work? Because you had had it, and then it goes, and they take it away from you, and then because someone else owns it, and then they auction it, and then it, you know, may or may not come back to you, and these are all things that you have to work out. So you really are at the mercy of others.
Well, I think people don't realize that museums are frequently borrowing works from private collectors and presenting them in their galleries. We're just like other museums in that regard. And we were so fortunate to have the Stewart Brothers collection for nearly 20 years that I think it made many people think perhaps we owned those paintings. But
yes,
of course, they were on loan. So it's always sad when they leave and depart. And in this case, they were sold at auction. But the wonderful news is the Gossips is back on view. The new owner of it put it back on exhibition and loaned it to us for a period of time. So artworks do move in and out of museums, and we're sorry that Saying Grace is gone, but we're thrilled that the Gossips is back for at least a short time.
Mm-hmm. And not to say that if you do a particular exhibition and that work is needed, that something cannot be worked out to bring it back into the fold.
Well, once the owner of it reveals who owns it, then
right,
yes, we could borrow it back and would love to be able to do that someday.
There's always that issue, isn't there? Right.
Yes.
Who owns what? You wrote a piece in the Berkshire Eagle at the end of the year entitled Why Norman Rockwell Matters, and it was a fascinating piece because you really talk about this market, $46 million dollars a set for Rockwell art at Sotheby's, and the fact that there has been such talk. There was the biography by Deborah Solomon. There was a lot going on in the fall. And so before we get into some of the details of that, just your thoughts as to why all of this interest, and not to say that there has been a resurgence, because it really never went away.
Oh, that's true. I think of it as a Rockwell moment.
Yeah.
We are in something of a renaissance for Rockwell's work, certainly seeing a pinnacle moment like the art auction, a $46 million art sale, not only set the record for Norman Rockwell, but it set the all-time American art record at auction, excluding the contemporary art sales, which are later period. So this is a marker in the art world that was noticed by everyone. But the convergence of interest in Rockwell, the timing of the release of the biography, at the same time this auction pinnacle moment happened, I think drew a lot of attention to looking at why Rockwell still continues to be so resonant and relevant today. And for me, I believe it's his great humanitarian qualities. He loved people, and the narrative storytelling paintings that he created all through his lifetime were his reflection of looking at the world around him, and really the kindness that he exhibits in his work and the sensitivity and caring, and told through humor, told through serious works. But this lasted throughout his whole career, and it makes the work very enduring and very accessible from many, many points of view to a wide range of audiences. And he's just a remarkable artist.
Have you seen more people come through the door as a result?
I think we'll see that in our busier seasons. It's January,
summer,
and it's been the deep freeze, so it's a slower season for us. But certainly we're seeing it. Our American Chronicles exhibition was recently at the Frist Museum in Nashville, Tennessee, and they had record-breaking attendance, and we see this everywhere our artwork is loaned. Because many museums did not collect Rockwell's work, the only way they can exhibit his work is when they borrow from us or some of the other collectors. And in every case, the exhibition sets records, attendance records, in their own institution.
There was the biography came out, American Mirror, The Life and Art of Norman Rockwell by Deborah Solomon. And there was controversy over this biography. Many members of the family, of the Rockwell family, disavowed the book and were quite upset with some of the some of the points made in it, suggesting homosexuality and perhaps an inappropriate relationship with children. Although there was no proof mentioned in the book, and it was not an absolute fact that was made in the book. I'm interested in what you make of the overall controversy and the dealings for you as a manager and as a CEO of this, not only of this museum, but of this legacy, in dealing with family members who are upset.
Yes, well, the book did cause distress for a number of Norman Rockwell's family members and friends and neighbors, and I empathize with that. I think this was a very difficult moment for them. I think what until people read the book and see the larger arc of it, and that it really addresses Norman Rockwell's place in the 20th century art world, we have to recognize that for more than 50 years, more than half a century, Norman Rockwell's been dismissed by the art world. He's been looked down upon, he's been scorned, and this book takes a serious stab at establishing his contributions to American art, and really is helps define the importance of his work and explains a more complex artist than many people, particularly the art historian and art critic world, had given attention to. In terms of managing the variety of viewpoints and opinions on this book, this is something that Norman Rockwell Museum has always tried to be a place that invites a variety of opinion and discourse on Rockwell. We've had museum catalogs of dedicated to Rockwell, for example, the Pictures for the American People, where we invited 14 different authors to write and express their thoughts and opinions on Rockwell. And some of those were not very complimentary. There's one that looked at him and still maintained that old sort of art historian attitude. And
Right. We
published this because we're a place where all points of view are welcome. And we do have the central repository and archive and papers of the artist. And this allows people to come and study and present new points of view and examine the artist from new perspectives, I hope long into the future.
I understand the art side of it, but then there's the personal side of it, of talking about the man himself. And there are some links that are made in the book, which are, I think, what disturbed the family so much. First of all, I have to ask you, did you find that? When you read it, were you shocked by that?
I think what emerges when one reads the book is it's really a very small narrative within the larger book. It's given very little play in the book. It is absolutely there. It is not uncommon for a biographer to examine the sexuality of their subject. Since the days of Sigmund Freud, this has become a practice in biography. So I look at a book like this and say, well, this is something that is done in biography, but the more important narrative is the art story in this book. And I think because it establishes some new lines of thinking and understanding about Rockwell, one of the things that stood out so strongly to me and compassionately is that it examines that when Rockwell went through his deepest periods of turmoil, periods of depression, periods when his wife was ill and he was struggling to find help for her. They moved to Stockbridge in order to find medical care. He was painting his very best work. And how inspiring to think that for any of us as human beings, when we are going through times of trouble and darkness, that there is the ability to draw up from within us some of our best work, some of the most sensitive work, the period he painted Saying Grace, for example, or Breaking Home Ties, or even his definitive work for the civil rights movement, The Problem We All Live With. These pictures came out of him in an era of great turmoil and difficulty for him. So the compassion as a human being and understanding the complexity of this artist, which he really hasn't been given credit for throughout most of his lifetime and until now, I thought was done very well in the book.
You, on the back of the book, there is a blurb from you, and you call the book a masterpiece. And I'm wondering if in this of this embrace of the book, if there is any twinge of regret of embracing something that does not put the artists that you have, you have put your whole life into, pretty much, that does not paint them in the best light.
Well, I have put 35 years of my life and my career believing in Norman Rockwell and the importance of him as an artist. And I actually am so pleased to see the attention he's receiving today in the art world and the auction market. Even the dialogue and controversy around the book suggests people care deeply about this artist. I believe this book makes a significant contribution to Rockwell's studies and actually does paint a good aspect of him in a very positive light in terms of his artistic contributions. And I think the simplicity people have assigned to him over the years, the lack of understanding of what a progressive individual he was, even to seek his own psychotherapy treatment at Austin Riggs at a time where this was just not widely done, and to find himself in conversation with one of the greatest thinkers of the 20th century, Erik Erikson, just show how progressive he is, and I think helps deepen the understanding of this artist and his tremendous contributions to American art and culture.
And is it ever hard for you, and this gets back to the managing by putting your name on the book and that of the institution itself, that it somehow endorses these I can't even in some cases call them conclusions, but observations that are made within the book?
Well, first of all, it is my testimonial for the book, not the museum's. The museum doesn't make endorsements about individual authors.
Right.
But as a scholar and someone who's worked with Rockwell's work for so very long, I have said that I believe the book makes an important contribution. And I think one has to read the book to see the larger contribution in the art world, and that there are so many aspects of Rockwell's life that it brings to life in a very sensitive and caring way. I have great empathy for the family's feelings and the differing opinions that the book has elicited. And just as I respect their opinion, I have my own opinion on the book. And I think that that's a healthy dialogue that I hope our museum would foster for a long time. This is why you find 16,000 biographies about Abraham Lincoln.
Sure.
A life is complex, and I hope this will inspire future biographers to work with the museum's archive and papers and really develop, you know, new theories and understanding about Norman Rockwell.
I have to wonder, were you, because you've done this for so long, and you have been a scholar of this work for so long, did you see, and not to the more controversial things, but were there new things brought to you that you had never seen before in the work, or see them in a new way?
Well, I think what I touched on a moment ago about the ability of Norman Rockwell to paint his masterpieces, his very best work, when he was going through the darkest, deepest time of his life, struck me so powerfully, and particularly a notion that I learned in studying up a little bit on the psychology of this idea of the space in between. I look at a painting like Saying Grace, and I marvel at how he could paint a multiplicity of expressions on the faces of the young men that are looking at the grandmother and her grandson in prayer. People think that picture is about religion and about prayer. I actually see that picture being about tolerance and respect.
Mm.
And Rockwell had this wonderful ability to capture the in-between moments in our lives, the place of becoming, moving from one stage of our life to another. Girl at Mirror, for example, where the young girl is pondering her adolescence, and he could see these changes that we move through our life. It's what he did so beautifully in his artworks and really captured our humanity. I think the book brought this aspect to life very, very well as the incredible pace of his life. If you look at, people think he was a painter of small town America and that he sat in his studio and painted all the time. And if you look at the amount of travel
out
this
and about
man was doing up and down the East Coast, on the train from Vermont to New York, to Philadelphia, down to Washington and on back up, he rode that train so many times, flew across the country, married his second wife from California, Mary Barstow, was back and forth to California, to Hollywood on the studios, had a studio himself there for a time. Then later in his late or elder statesman years, as I like to think of them, was a world traveler, was working with the U.S. Information Agency and the Peace Corps and all of his work for Look magazine. He was traveling all over the world and painting an understanding of other cultures and bringing the ideas and ideals of America to other places. So he was a very worldly and sophisticated man. And the complexity of both his personal life, his intellectual life, his travel and outward cosmopolitan life, I think the book brings to life in ways that most people don't give him credit for.
Are you comfortable at this moment of the relationship that you and the museum have with the family that was the family members who were upset?
Well, I regret that the family members have been so upset over this book. I feel great empathy for that and really feel pained over that. We've had relations with the Norman Rockwell family members since the founding of the museum, and we're in regular communication. We present the art of the many artists in Norman Rockwell's family, Jarvis and Peter, and I think that to have had a 45-year relationship with the family members and many family members that have been so healthy and harmonious, that I anticipate this will continue despite the differences over this particular book, which is mostly held by one branch of the family, not universally by the whole family.
Not universal, but I assume, you know, are you actively? Is there an attempt to kind of an olive branch on any side to? I guess what I'm asking is do you feel it in your duty, and maybe you don't even have to worry about this, where you say, okay, well, I really want to work on this relationship?
Oh, I absolutely do. I always have. I consider the Rockwell family members good friends. I hold them in my heart.
And even when Thomas was on, had nothing, you know, good things to say about you and the museum. I mean, we were upset about the book, obviously, but there was still that relationship that exists.
It's a wonderful family. It's a creative family. We now have next generation members of the Rockwell family on our board, Daisy Rockwell. We've had Tom Rockwell, Cindy Rockwell over the years. So the closeness between the family and the museum, I hope, will continue. We're working right now with Peter Rockwell on a new sculpture that he's been designing for us for the last 10-12 months. We've enjoyed exhibiting Jarvis Rockwell's work and are planning to travel that exhibition. I think all of these ties will endure and continue, and it's been a sadness to have a chapter like this emerge, but it's not the defining chapter of the relationship between the museum and the family.
Nor a defining chapter, because I think one of the things that you've said this morning that is resonating me more with anything else is there's a lot more is going to be written about, a lot more is going to be said about this man, a lot more is going to come out, and through that scholarship, we only benefit from it, I assume.
Well, I think that's absolutely true, Joe. I think particularly when you have a book that's become as controversial as this one have, it will rally the interest of new scholars and people who will want to both debunk concepts that were explored in the book as well as present new ideas. And if anything, this will call more scholars to the table to examine Rockwell. He's such an interesting figure, and he's such an important figure in American life and art. And that is what has drawn me to his work all of these years, and the millions of people in this country and around the world who adore him.
So obviously, as we mentioned, a lot of this is generating interest, and you have an exciting season coming up. So what do we have to look forward to?
Well, we have to look forward to our summer season of Edward Hopper, another of America's great painters.
I love Edward Hopper.
Edward Hopper is, if for many people, as wonderful as Norman Rockwell's art.
Shiver-inducing.
And what we're going to be looking at in particular are his early years as an illustrator. And many people don't know this aspect about him or about many of the modern artists of the day. And so we're assembling a very interesting group of works that show the commercial art period of Hopper, where you see many of the seeds and roots of the kinds of works that he was to go on to paint as a easel painter and fine art painter later in his life. So I'm very excited about that. You might recall that the other record-breaking artist at auction last December was Edward Hopper at the Christie's sale. Yep. So we're seeing, I think, a great renaissance in American art. In March, we're opening a wonderful exhibit of the art of Murray Tinkleman as part of our Distinguished Illustrator Series, a contemporary living artist who's been doing wonderful work in the themes of rodeo, automobiles, baseball, all American subjects, and has been a great teacher and professor of illustration art as well. So we're excited about that. And in the fall, we're looking at the art of Mort Kunstler, who started his career as an illustrator, and he became the artist who has really defined the imagery of the American Civil War in recent times and is now working on a book of American history. And I think this is what we see in the illustrators. They are creating the ideas and images of America through pictures. Today we see this through television and on the internet and in the computer space, but at the time that these illustrators were working in the era of the American magazine, these were the image makers of America. And we'll be taking a close look at all of that this year at the Rockwell Museum.
Can't wait. The Norman Rockwell Museum is in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, and Lori Norton Moffitt is the museum director and CEO. And Lori, I thank you very much. Congratulations on the new acquisition and all of the new stuff and the exciting work that you have coming up that with us. And I also thank you for talking about the other delicate topics at hand and being so great about that. I appreciate you being here.
Thanks so much.
As always.
Love being here. Thank you.
Thank you.